We're holding on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, the second line. Actually, the third line. So we learned yesterday, you have a case where a man says that I want to give something to my unborn child. I want to be mezakeh something to my unborn child. Does that work? Rav Huna had said that Rav Huna had said that no. So Rav Nachman asked on him, wait a minute, doesn't our Mishnah imply that he could? And Rav Huna says, and we went through that I don't know which Tana this Mishnah follows, meaning I don't think that we can accept this Mishnah as halach. So the last thing we said was that why don't we assume that the Mishnah is talking about where he's saying now, while she's pregnant, in the future, when the baby is born, then I want this kinyan to take effect. And then at that point, it's not a, the we pointed out that the issue that Rav Huna would have is that an unborn baby can't be koine because because it doesn't exist yet. But fine, why don't we say then that once the baby is born, then he is then l'shetelid, or then already he exists. So therefore, at that point, the kinyan should be able to take effect. And we said that no, Rav Huna would hold that even in that case, it doesn't work. So the Gemara says, "The Amr of Nachman, Hamazakal Uba Leikana." Rav Nachman says it's true that if a person is mezakeh to an unborn baby, he's not going to be able to be koneh because the baby doesn't exist yet, at least not fully. But l'chetelid koneh. But it would work if he says that it should take that the kinyan should take effect once the baby is born. Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rosh point out, practically speaking, you have to wonder what kind of kinyan would that be. If we talk about, for example, a kinyan sudr or meshicha or things like that, by the time the baby is born, that kinyan no longer exists. It was a one-time thing that was done, and that kinyan doesn't exist anymore. So rather, he says we'd have to be talking about, for example, you'd have to be talking about, for example, he was mezakeh through somebody else. Told somebody else, "I want you to be zoicha on behalf of this unborn baby." And then that person is still alive, is still around when the baby is born. Another possibility would be that you write out a shtar, and you have, for example, we're talking about chazaka on karka, where it's possible to acquire it with a shtar. Another possibility would be that you do meshicha. We were talking about metaltlin. You do meshicha. You put them in a you put them in the chotzer of the mezakeh, and then therefore he's able to be mezakeh. Therefore he's able to give it to the baby when he's born. Whatever the case, Reb Nachman says that it is possible to make that happen. V'Rav Huna Omer Aflach Shetelad. Rav Huna holds that no, even once the baby is born, it's still not going to work because at the time that he first said that he first made the kinyan, the baby wasn't alive yet. The Rashbam points out Rav Nachman does hold that that einot a makne. But here, says the Rashbam, Rav Nachman would consider that the baby is already in the world. Davar shaloi b'la'olam would be where it doesn't, where bechlal, it doesn't exist yet. We're going to talk about an Amud Beis, for example, a person who says to his wife, "Your future children, which she's not even pregnant yet, are going to be koneh." And we said that for sure doesn't work because they're certainly not b'la'olam. But here, at least, you have a baby in the womb is already. Rav Nachman is going to consider him b'la'olam, and of course, the nechosim are already b'la'olam. So all you need is that the baby should be born, and then it'll work. As opposed to according to Rav Huna, even that is not going to work. Rishonim discussed different ideas behind the svaras of Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. One thing is that Rashba points out, it comes out that Rav Nachman and Rav Huna are holding precisely, not only they hold, of course, different dinim, but the underlying reasoning behind them is precisely the opposite of one another. Rav Huna holds that Rav Huna holds that you can't be you can be makne. We talked about yesterday that you could be makne davar shaloi b'la'olam. We said yesterday he holds like Rav Meir, who says, for example, that you're able to be makne, let's say, the fruit of a tree that hasn't grown yet. Rav Meir will hold that, and Rav Huna agrees with him, but he'll say you can't be mezakeh to somebody who doesn't exist yet. As opposed to Rav Nachman is going to say the other way around. You can't be machna something that doesn't exist yet, but you could be machna to somebody who doesn't exist yet. Namely, because so in other words, we don't have to say according to the Rashba, we don't have to say like the Rashbam's explanation that Rav Nachman considers the baby to already be bala olam because he's in the womb and he already exists there in the womb. Rather, we can say. That Rav Nachman would hold that you could be mezaket to somebody who doesn't exist yet bechlal. So the opposite of Ravuna. So there is more discussion about that. There's more lumdus about that. Another way of understanding it is That you don't need any maise in order for the baby to be born. Unlike, for example, the case we talked about yesterday, where, for example, a goy says to a Jewish woman, "I'm mekadesh you," and it should take effect after I'm megayer. So a difference, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman points out, a difference is that it's mechusar maise. You're lacking something. Let's say she's an eishes ish. She needs a get. Let's say it's a ger. He needs a gerus. There's some maise that needs to happen, as opposed to here we're just talking about a birth, which is something that happens naturally. So it's not considered mechusar maise. So the point is there are a few different ways of understanding the svaras of Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. Anyway, so you have those two opinions. Then you have a third opinion. So the point is that Rav Huna is being consistent when he says Mishnah Seinu Eini Yodea Mishnah. I don't know who taught, which Tana taught our Mishnah that it's possible for a person to say that this unborn baby, if it's a boy, should get 100 zuz, and if it's a girl, 200 zuz. According to Rav Huna, there seems to be no way to make that work. So now we have a third opinion. Rav Shesha Sama Echad Zeva Echad Zakona. Rav Shesha says it doesn't matter either way, whether he's mezake whether he says that I'm mezake to the baby and to the unborn baby and it should take effect as of now, or whether he says it should take effect after the baby is born. Either way, Kona, the unborn baby is Kona. So in short, we have Rav Huna saying that you're never able to be machna to an unborn baby, whether you say l'chshetelad, that should take effect when the baby is born or not. Rav Nachman saying you can't say that the baby in the womb should acquire the matana, but you could say that should take effect l'chshetelad when she gives birth. And according to Rav Sheshes, either one would work. Of Sheshes Menam Minala. So if Sheshes says, where am I getting this from? That an unborn baby is able to be koina. Detanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ger Shemes. Suppose that a ger dies, and as we've learned before, a ger in Halacha is not considered to have any relatives. Ger Shenis Gair, a cotton shenola dummy. He's considered like a newborn baby. The only way he's going to have relatives who are considered his, the only way he's going to have relatives who are considered as relatives in Halacha is if he has children. So now he died, seemingly childless, or bizbazu, you saw on the chosav. So Jews went and plundered all of his property. Bizbazu, the Rashbam points out, you have a pasuk, bozazu ishloi, that each person took the spoils as he wanted. So the same way over here, bizbazu means that people just went and took all of his nechosim and were machzik in them. V'shamu sheyeshloi ben. Then they heard that this ger has a son. Well, that destroys the whole thing because now the son is going to Yarshin from the ger. And we mean a son that was born after, that was conceived and born after the guy became a ger, because if the baby was conceived before he became a ger, then there were other dinim. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about that later in the perek. Best is a sham in about a week's time about what happens then. But in any case, here we're talking about that a baby that was conceived and born after he became a ger. Well, no question, that baby, that child inherits his property. Or they hear that his wife was pregnant, and in that case, she's carrying a baby who's going to inherit. So they have to return everything that they took, because here they took everything thinking that it's available for the taking, and it turns out that it's not. Now the point is, so far we seem to be saying that the unborn baby is able to yarshin, therefore they have to return. So that's Rav Sheshes' proof that you can be machna to an unborn baby. Continues the Braisa, Hechziru Akol. What happens if they did return everything? Then they heard that the son who the ger had has died. So now it reverts back to the yerda. It reverts back to the ger, to the father. And since the father has no other has no other heirs in halacha, then therefore they can take it again. Or they heard that we heard that his wife was pregnant. Now we found out that she miscarried. So again, everything is hefker. Then hechzik bashmiya kona, whoever did a chazaka the second time after that new news came, kona is kona than a chasim. Over rishona like kona, but whoever made a chazaka only the first time is not kona. Because it turns out that it wasn't kinyan, wasn't a valid chazaka. There's discussion about this, what it means, when exactly. So do we mean that for example the son or the unborn baby died after they returned the nechasim the first time and before they got them the second time? So the Rashbam seems to imply that that's how it was, that they returned it because they heard that he has a son. Then after that the son died, now we're talking about taking it again, and we're saying the second person, whoever did the second kinyan is the one who's koine. And the Torah Chaim explains differently. He explains that actually we can be talking about they didn't return the nechasim yet, and then the son died. Nevertheless, they still need a second kinyan because, as the Gemara, which the Gemara is going to discuss now, why that is. But the point is, in other words, that so we don't have to say that they returned it, because if they returned it and then if they returned everything and then the son died and then they took it again, of course, whoever did the chazaka the first time is not going to be effective. They returned it already. So therefore, the point would be, even if they didn't return it yet, nevertheless they need a new kinyan. Anyway, so the point is that we see from this braisa, so Sheshis continues, v'isakudaitach uber lekoni, if you're going to tell me that an unborn baby is not able to be koina, why do they need to make a second? Why do they need to make a second kinyan, a second chazaka? Didn't they already make a chazaka the first time, and that should be good enough? So obviously, what it must be is the same way as if there was an already born child, then they would need to do that. So in particular, Tosfos also adds the point that that after all, if the baby wasn't able to be koina, since it turned out that if we have in the sefer of the Braisa, where it turned out that the baby was miscarried or stillbirth, then we're saying whoever did the chazaka the first time wouldn't be koina. Why not? It turns out that this unborn baby wasn't even viable. So therefore, so you see that he's able to be koina even when he's a baby in the womb. Now, with that said, the Ramban disagrees with that point. The Ramban learns if the baby was miscarried, then in fact the taka wouldn't work for him to be koina even according to Rav Sheshis, because it would only work with a baby where we can eventually the baby is born healthy, and therefore we can say lamafreya, we can say that retroactively he was koina as a baby. But when he was born to begin, when he was miscarried, when there was an early miscarriage in the first place, then maybe we wouldn't say that. We'd have to be talking about over here, says the Ramban, that we'd be talking about over here that it was a full term birth and then it was a stillbirth. So therefore, so now we would consider it would have, under normal circumstances, we would have expected the baby to be born alive and to actually be able to exercise his yerusha. So therefore, so now we could say that. But in other words, the Ramban would say if he was born premature and wasn't alive, then that would be different. In any case, the point is, says Rav Sheshis, you see from this braisa that an unborn baby is able to yarshin. Tosfos, by the way, also discusses in this connection. We learned yesterday the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that says that an uber, that an unborn baby is able to be koine. We have the whole din with truma and the wife of a koyin and the baby she's carrying and the avodim that her husband owned, etc. Tosfos points out Rav Sheshis may hold that even the chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yossi would also hold that an unborn baby is able to be koina. The reason they disagree with him in the matter of truma is because of other considerations that because of other considerations that are more specific to Truma. Anyway, the point is, again, getting back to the Gemara, the point is that the Rav Sheshis is saying, you see from this whole story over here, that it's possible for an unborn baby to be koine. However, the Gemara says, not necessarily. You know what? It's different when the when you have a Yerusha, which comes automatically. Here we're talking, in this sugya, we're talking about a matana, where you have to be mezaka, you have to do a maisa of kinyan in order for somebody to acquire it. So that's one thing. You can't necessarily do that to an unborn baby. The braisa that that Rav Sheshis brought is talking about Yerusha, which happens automatically. So therefore, you could say when no maisa is needed at all, then the unborn baby is able to be koina, and therefore in this braisa he yaushins his father the ger's property even while he's in the womb. But you're talking about to be mezaka to him where you need an actual action of kinyan of zikui, that not necessarily. Rava says there's another reason that we can't. There's another reason that Rav Sheshis is. Proof is not quite so strong. Shiny hosam durafuyim merafyin biyadayo meikra. Because in that case of the ger, maybe in other words, we could in fact say that a baby is not normally able to acquire neither a yerusha nor a matana. But shiny hosam. To begin with, anybody who made a chazaka on that property, to begin with, it was weak. It wasn't really a strong chazaka in the first place because there was the possibility that they themselves did not have a full intention to make a chazaka because they themselves didn't know does he have yoshim or not. In the end, when it turns out that he had a yodish, they find out he has a son, or they find out that that his wife is pregnant and she might give birth to a healthy baby. So therefore, to begin with, their chazaka is not so strong unless they make a chazaka again after the baby or after the child or the unborn baby dies. So Rava is saying, so Abaya is saying that you don't have a proof from that, but at least you could say that an Uber is able to acquire something, namely a Yerusha. He just won't be able to acquire a matana, as Rav Sheshis is saying. Rava is saying maybe not. Maybe an unborn baby is not even able to acquire a Yerusha. But the reason why they have to make a second chazaka in the case with the ger is because they themselves were uncertain about it, whether they're actually going to be able to get these nechasim, because they themselves didn't know if he has a yodosh or not. The Rosh learns actually that Rava is not necessarily disagreeing with Abaya. He's just saying there's another way of explaining the braisa so that it doesn't necessarily indicate that an Uber is able to acquire a matana, but he might agree with Abaya that at least an Uber is able to yaushin. On Omid Beis, actually, the Rashbam himself points out that Rava is not saying as a even according to Rashbam, who learns that Rava is arguing with Abaya over there, he's not necessarily saying it as a definitive statement that an Uber definitely is not able to be Yodish. He's saying you don't really have a proof from that, because in that particular case, since their own Chazaka is weak, then that would explain why they have to make a second Chazaka. But Rava himself may well agree with Abaya's principle, and then later on, the Gemara is going to bring another way of understanding the situation. In fact, now Tosfos had mentioned the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that we learned yesterday, and there is a machlokas within that. There's machlokas of Rishonim and a machlokas of Poskim whether. In the end, since we have Rabbi Yossi saying that an Uber is able to be koina to a certain extent, and we're saying over here that Abaya also says that, maybe that indicates the halacha is like Abaya over here, even though usually, of course, the halacha is like Rava. Maybe after all, as Tosfos says, maybe Rabbi Yossi's opinion is not necessarily so relevant over here, because there we have something specific in connection with the dinner of Truma. So therefore maybe in fact the halacha would be, maybe the halacha would be like Rava, if we assume, like the Rashbam says, that Rava is arguing with Abaye. On top of that, also you actually have a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid, whether the Rambam writes that if the, based on the Gemara further on, based on the Gemara as we go through the continuation over here, that if a baby was born, even if he it's premature and he died on the day he was born, then he's still Yarshins, and that has implications for the continuation of the Yerusha. And then the Ravid disagrees with that and says that that no, listen, if the baby was born premature and then he died, then it's a suffix whether he was whether he was a nafel, whether he was a baby that was ever going to live, and then and his other brothers are vadoyim, and therefore you wouldn't say that. So and in fact there's further discussion about that among the Noisa Kalim of Rambam and in Shulchan Aruch, and it's Noisa Kalim about all those details about in the end what is the halacha about an unborn baby inheriting. Based on this Gemara over here. Fine. So the Gemara says, "My benai." Now, what's the practical difference between Abaye and Rava? According to now, so again, in the Ritva points out, the Gemara is not really asking. Obviously, there's a big difference between them. According to Abaye, an unborn, according to Abaye, at least the way that Ashbam is learning Abaye and Rava, an unborn baby is able to yarshin, and according to Rava, he's not. So the question is not really what the practical difference is between them. The question rather is, in this particular case involving the ger and his nechasim, given that both Abaye and Rava agree that that the first chazaka that they did doesn't count, whether because, as Abaye says, because the unborn baby actually acquired the nechasim, and now they have to make a new kinyan on them, or whether, like Rava says, because they themselves had a weak kinyan on it in the first place, what's the practical difference between the, where would there be a practical difference between those two explanations? And the answer is ikibinau shamu ba shemes v'loy mes v'achakach mes. What happens if they heard that the baby died, but in fact he hadn't died, and later on he did? So so before we had the scenario, they went and took all the nechasim, then they found out that his wife was pregnant, for example. And so they and then later on, in fact, they found out that she had miscarried. Now we have a further twist. We can have, we heard that the baby died, but in fact that was the unborn baby. In fact, that was wrong. The unborn baby was still alive in his mother's womb, and later on he died. So according to Rava, they actually thought by the time they made the first chazaka that the unborn baby is dead. Therefore, their chazaka is a strong chazaka. Therefore, according to Rava, they shouldn't need a they shouldn't need a new chazaka. Because when they made the chazaka, they had already, either the Rashbam says, either they made a chazaka after the first report that the baby is dead, or even they had made it beforehand, but they still were muchzik in it when that happened. So according to Rava, then it would be a valid chazaka because we can't say the chazaka was weak. In fact, it was quite strong. As opposed to, according to Abaye, that it's a matter of that an unborn baby can yarshin. Well, then the fact is the unborn baby yarshin, and they had their chazaka took place when the baby was still alive, and therefore it's not going to work. So the Rashbam mentions, he begins explaining this point. He says, Lashonis Rabim Shamaiti, I've heard many different Lashonis, V'lo Yoshru Be'enai, I don't find them compelling. And then he explains the way that we just said, that we're talking about that the Shomu Bo Shemes is referring to the baby, and we're talking about that they heard that the baby had died, and then in fact it hadn't died, and then it turned out that actually, he did. So the Ramban actually points out that, you know what, I mean, it's a little hard with the wording, because then it should say, usually for an unborn baby, you use the word hipila, that she miscarried, not mess, which is usually used of a baby who was already born. Anyway, the Rambam has a whole different understanding of this of Shomo Boish Mess, etc. The Rambam understands that it means, to begin with, the people took the Nechosim, they heard that the Ger had died. Forget about the children. They heard that the Ger himself had died, and then it turned out that was wrong. He wasn't dead, and then in the end he did actually die, still without children. So therefore, so that would be the situation then. So to begin with, they heard that he had died, that the ger had died, and therefore his property is available for the taking. Then they heard that he didn't die after all. Then they heard that the original report was true. So now a buyer would say it's a matter of the it's a it's a it's a it's a it's a matter of the unborn baby of the unborn baby get, being zeicher the nechassim. So therefore, so according to a buyer, there's no unborn baby involved over here. Therefore, they should be koineh. He doesn't care about whether the original chazaka was weak or strong. He just cares whether there's a baby available to yarshin them. So therefore, according to a buyer, it would work, and they were koineh them, as opposed to according to Rava, that it's a matter of weak or strong. Then to begin with, when they heard that he was dead, they weren't absolutely certain about it. So therefore, we would say that it doesn't work, and they need a second chazaka. Okay. In any case, the point is that this braisa about the ger doesn't necessarily prove Rav Sheshis's point that an unborn baby is able to be kona, because at the very least, according to Abaye, you can't say that from it that you can see that he's kona matana. All you can see at most is he can acquire a yerusha, and according to Rava, maybe not even that. All right, the Gemara says Toshma. I'm going to try to bring another proof for Rav Sheshis's opinion that an unborn baby is able to be kona even while he's in the womb. A Mishnah says, Tinek ben yom echad neuchel umanchil. A baby 1 day old, meaning not, it doesn't mean 1 full day, it just means even on the day he was born, is able to neuchel, he's able to inherit, umanchil, and he's able to cause others to inherit. Now, what that means is, now this is a Mishnah in Nida. The Gemara there says, wait, what do you mean? He's able to cause somebody else to inherit. He doesn't have any children of his own, obviously. He was just born today. So what would we be talking about? We'd be saying, in other words, that his brothers are going to Yarshin from him. Well, if he hadn't been born, they would have Yarshin directly from their father anyway. So what's the difference whether we say that the baby is Yodesh and Manchil? So Omer of Sheshes, so and the implication further is Ben Yom Echad Ein Uboloi. And then the implication is that only if he's a day old, only when he was born, can he inherit, not when he's still an unborn baby. So this would be a proof against Rav Sheshes. So the Gemara answer is no, because Ha'omer of Sheshes, because Rav Sheshes there explains that actually what we mean is, as far as Neuchel Manchil, we mean where there's a blended family involved over here. The Rashbam points out that the Gemara anyway brings that answer in Nida to explain a different point. There's a different question that the Gemara has over there, and it answers and it uses this to answer the question. The question before of what does it mean Neuchel or Manchel? What do we care whether he's Manchel or not? Either way, his brothers are inheriting directly from their father. So Rav Sheshis's answer is. It is answering that as well, but in addition, it also helps us here with Rav Sheshis's opinion, because Rav Sheshis himself explains what it means is neuchel b'nichsei mahanchel la'achen min ha'av. What it means is this baby who was born today he's able to yarshin from his mother, and then in turn he bequeaths that yerusha to his brothers from his father. So the Rashbam teaches out, gives the example. Let's say you have Rachel gave birth to Yosef and died that same day. So Yosef yarshins from Rachel. So now, if Yosef dies and he has half brothers who have the same father, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc., then they're going to yarshin from him. Had it not been that way, had Yosef died in the womb or otherwise not been a viable baby, then he wouldn't yarshin from Rachel, where then it would then go to his brothers who are not Rachel's children. So there, the fact that he was born is important. So in other words, you could say when it comes to himself yarshining, it doesn't matter whether he's born yet. It would work even if he's still in the womb. But when it comes to causing his half brothers to yarshin, for that it requires that he was born. In fact, Tosfos asks, given that that answer is so obvious, because again, you have the question that what do you need otherwise? What do you mean need manchil for? If you're just talking about that, if you're just talking about yoshining from his father and bequeathing to his father's other yoshim, then it's not necessary anyhow for it to go through him. That's such an obvious point that why did the Gemara even bring the question on Rav Sheshis in the first place? And so Tosfos explains that, of course, the Makshin knew we're talking about Yaushining from the mother, but he thought, as the Gemara is going to go discuss over here, the question that maybe when the mother dies, then the baby is still alive for a little bit, etc. Anyway, so the point is though that the point is though that there it is significant the baby has to have been born in order for that whole mechanism to work. So the davka ben yom echad aval uberloy, only if the baby is at least one day old, meaning he was at least already born when the mother dies, aval uberloy, but not if he's an unborn baby. My timer, and why is that? Because dehu my aspiration. The reason is because if the mother died, then the unborn baby will have died before her. So in other words, when she dies, that unborn baby is already dead. We don't say that we would consider, well, had the son been alive, he would have yaushin from his mother. And now, therefore, his half-brothers who have the same father, yaushin him, we don't say that. We say that only if the baby was already born. If the baby is already bekever, he's already in the grave, he's already dead, then we don't say that his Yerusha takes effect and therefore that his brothers in turn Yaushin from him. The Rashbam points out at the end of the Perek, at the end of our Perek, we're going to learn a number of cases involving where you have two people die, two relatives, and you don't know which died first. And you have a case over there involving, for example, a man and his mother, where, for example, a house collapsed on them and we don't know which one died first, where it's going to make a big difference, because if in that case, for example, if the mother dies first and then her son yaushins her, and then if that son has half brothers, like in the scenario we just said, then they're going to yaushin from him, and the result is, for example, that Rachel's property is going to end up going to Leah's children, as opposed to if the son dies first, then we don't say that. So we see that once the son is dead, we don't say that then he would have yaushin, and therefore it goes to his brothers. The same thing over here. So therefore, if Sheshis would tell you that when a mother dies, the baby in her womb dies first, and therefore he was never able to yaushin, and therefore he can never bequeath it to his brothers. So that would be why that Mishnah is saying that he has to be born. That doesn't imply, though, that for himself to yaushin, that he couldn't already do that. When he's in the womb, maybe he could. So the Gemara asks, now Tosfos points out actually that there is that based on other Gemaras, it comes out it's actually not so simple. There can be cases where the unborn baby outlives the mother. So one thing is Tosfos makes a distinction whether the mother died naturally or not. If the mother died naturally, then we're saying over here that the baby will have died first, because basically what happens is she's losing her life force, and therefore the baby in her womb, whatever it is that keeps the baby alive is no longer functioning properly, and therefore the baby dies, and therefore eventually so does she. As opposed to if she was killed, then the baby might well outlive her. So that being the case, then it comes out that actually that when the Gemara is saying over here that the unborn baby is not going to yaushin from his mother and then pass it on to his mother, to his brothers from his mother, from his father's side, not necessarily is that always the case. Sometimes, in fact, you could have where that will happen. All it is the Mishnah in Nidah is saying as a blanket statement, the Mishnah in Nidah wants to make a blanket statement about an unborn baby, about a baby who's on the day that he was born, always, once he was born, there's no question that he's yaushining his mother's property and then passing it along to his half-brothers, as opposed to based on what Tosfos is saying over here, when he's still in the womb, that it will really depend, because sometimes he might outlive his mother, sometimes not. Then again, you also have on top of that, again, you have before the machlokas that we mentioned of the Rambam and the Ravid. If the baby is born, If the baby is born, and the, if the mother dies and the baby is born, and then he dies on that same day, then we would still say that he yaushins from her and passes it along to his brother and the, to his brothers. And the Ravid says, no, it really depends whether it was after a full term pregnancy, otherwise it's a suffix, whether he was a non-viable baby. And therefore, so he therefore we can't his suffix can't take away from the Vaday. And the Magen Mishnah and the Rambam discusses it in a couple of places in Hilchos Nachos, where the Rambam mentions this. The Magen Mishnah says that listen, the Rambam is saying that look, you know, the Gemara is saying over here an unborn baby doesn't inherit, so but a born baby evidently does. Doesn't matter whether he was born premature or not, but still he says Tzorachiyun. Then in Hilchos Yibum, the Magen Mishnah also mentions it and says fine, the Rambam could be talking about when you see clearly that the baby was born. Full, that the baby was born full term and with all the simonim of a full term baby, hair, complete hair and nails and so forth. And then you have the Shulchan Aruch brings this halacha. And the Nosekelim and the Ramah brings the Ravid and then the Nosekelim over there have a fun time with it dealing with the Ram with the Ramam and the Ravid's opinions. Okay, in any case, so the Gemara asks, Lememra dehu mayis bereisha, you're telling me that an unborn baby in the womb always dies before the mother, even if, now we're talking again, as Tosfos says, specifically where the mother died a natural death, but is that necessarily the case? V'ha'ava uvda, it happened once that there was a mother who died while she was pregnant, Opirkus Tlosa Pirkusi, and the baby in the womb still was moving around after the mother died, three movements. What happened after that? It doesn't say. Maybe they managed to cut the mother open in time and get the baby out, maybe not. Tosfos brings a girsa, not Tlosa Pirkusi, three movements, but ad Tlosa Parisi, that this was going on for the length of time that it would take to walk three parisa, which is around an hour. So you see that the baby survived his mother. The answer is Omer Mabir Rav Ashi, no. Midi Dehavi Al Znab Halatar Shemefakeses. You know what? It might be no more than just convulsive motion without actually being alive. Just like, for example, a lizard. If you cut off its tail, it'll still twitch for a while, even though obviously it's not alive. So the same way, this baby, there's still some chayus left in its nerves and whatever, and therefore it's able to twitch and move a little bit, and maybe even, as Tosfos says, for the time it says takes to walk three parasa, that doesn't necessarily mean it's actually alive. Okay, in any case, so that's one way of understanding then why it is that in that Mishnah in Nidda we're saying that the baby has to have been born first in order for him to inherit from his mother and then pass it along to his brothers from his father's side, is because if he was unborn, then as long as the mother died a natural death, necessarily he will have died before her, and therefore we wouldn't say that his brothers then yaushin from him. Instead, what would happen is the nechosim would remain in her possession, and since she doesn't have any children to yaushin it from her, then therefore it would go back to her birth family. Now, Breder of Yosef says in the name of Rava, here is a different reason why that Mishnah is not contradicting Rav Sheshes. So again, Rav Sheshes had said that even an unborn baby is able to yaushin. We asked on him from this Mishnah, which implies that only once the baby is born can he yaushin. And we're saying, because when we're talking about to pass it along to his brothers from his father's side, for that he needs to have been born, otherwise the whole mechanism wouldn't work, because we wouldn't say he yaushins from his mother after he's dead. So now, Amar Breder of Yosef says there's a different reason. When the Mishnah says that, when the Mishnah says noichel manchil, it means loymav shemamayit b'chelik b'chorera, because the Mishnah is not talking about over there about Yerusha. Maybe even you could say that the unborn baby is able to yaushin. Maybe you could say even that even after he's dead in the womb, still we would say that he would have yaushin from his mother, and therefore it gets passed along to his half-brothers. But rather, loymar shememayit b'chelik b'chorah. Only once the baby is born does he reduce the amount that goes to the b'chor. So in other words, like this. So we're not talking about yaushining from the mother, necessarily. We are talking about yaushining from the father. Now this baby is obviously not the Bechor, because we're talking about he was, or not obviously, we're talking about that he's not the Bechor. He has other brothers. What it means, so Vidavka, Ben Yom Echad, so Davka, if he was born already, then he reduces the Chelek Bechorah, Aval Uber, but if he's an unborn baby and he's born only after his father dies, Loy, then he would not. Now, what does that mean? The Rashbam explains, let's say, for example, we start out with, which, by the way, this is in the name of Rava. So the Rashbam points out, now Rava himself had already said on Amud Aleph that an unborn baby is not able to Yarshin. He had used, when we brought the Braisa about the Ger and his Nechosim, Rava had explained that not necessarily are you saying that an unborn baby is able to be Yerush anything, but the people who did the Chazakah on the Ger and Nechosim themselves had a weak Kinyan on it. Now, though the Rashbam says, so Rava himself is saying you could go either way. You could explain it that way, or you could explain that in fact an unborn baby is able to yaushin, but that he doesn't reduce the chelik b'chorah, as we're going to explain now. So, in other words, the point is that Rava is saying is you don't really have a proof from that brisa one way or the other, neither in favor of Rav Sheshes nor against him, because either way, whenever you're bringing up a point relating to that, you could say that you could say that maybe an unborn baby yarshins, maybe he doesn't. Again, according to the Rishonim that we mentioned on Amud Aleph, who say that Rava is anyway not arguing with Abaya, he agrees that an unborn baby can yarshin. He's just saying that you don't have a solid proof from that brisa. Then all the more so, we would say he's not contradicting himself, he's being consistent in saying that an unborn baby can yarshin. However, he just doesn't take away from the Chelek Bechorah. What do we mean by that? So the Rashbam gives an example. Let's say you have two sons, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven's the Bechor. Now let's say the estate amounts to 12 mana. So if you just have those two, then fine. You split it in three parts, because the Bechor is going to get two of those parts and the Poshut is going to get the other. So Reuven will end up with eight and Shimon with four. Now what happens is, Had Levi been born before Yaakov, their father, died, then instead of eight and four, Levi would, of course, be entitled to a portion of the Yerusha himself. And he would, because he was born before Yaakov died, he would be memayit b'chelek b'chora, which means the amount of the b'chora would go down. Now, instead, we're splitting the Yerusha into four parts. Reuven gets two of those parts, which amounts to six. And Shimon and Levi are each getting three. So instead of eight and four, it would be six, three, and three. Now, what happens, though, the twist is that Ma'a B'reid Rav Yosef is telling us in the name of Rava that if Levi is born after Yaakov dies, then it's something else. Then what we do is we start by calculating the Chelek B'chorah. For that purpose, we ignore Levi. We say that we have to focus only on the children who were born while Yaakov was alive, which are Reuven and Shimon. The Chelek Bechorah then, of course, according to that, would come out to four. Because again, had there been only the two children, Reuven and Shimon, then he would have, Reuven would be getting, as the Bechor, he would be getting four. As any other son, he would get another four. And Shimon would also be getting four. So the Chelek Bechorah then, according to that, is four. So first we set aside four, which is going to be going to Reuven. That leaves us with eight. Now we take the eight and we split it three ways among them, because now we have to take Levi into account. So now, so eight divided by three is going to be 2 2/3. So it's going to result, in other words, that Reuven, instead of getting, so Reuven is not going to get the full eight that he would have if Levi hadn't been born, but he's not going to get also only the six that he would have if Levi had been born before Yaakov dies. Instead, he ends up with 7 2/3. So that's what we mean, that Levi is einem emayit b'chelek b'chora, means that he does not reduce. Means that the amount that Reuven is going to get for the Chelek Bechorah is going to be the same whether Levi had been born or whether he had not been born, because Levi was born only after Yaakov, their father, died. So that would be what the Mishnah is saying. Tinik ben yom echad, noichel umanchil, doesn't mean as far as yaushening from his mother and passing it along to his father's to his brothers from his father's side, like we said before. What we mean is only when he's born noichel, then he's able to inherit a full share in the Yerusha. Meaning, in other words, that then the fact that he's getting a share reduces the chelik b'chora that his older brother Reuven gets, as opposed to if he had not been born. As opposed to if he was still an unborn baby when Yaakov died, then we would say that, yes, he's getting a portion, but not relative to the Chelek Bechorah. The Chelek Bechorah is still, of Reuven, is still intact. It's still full four mana. And by the way, the Rashbam adds, of course, if after this Levi were to die, then and Reuven and Shimon are yarshining his property, then... Then you would you so you'd have so so his so so Levi had gotten 2 2/3, which means that we split it half to one and half to the other, so each one gets 1 1/3. But the point still being, in other words, that because Levi was born only after Yaakov died, then the Chelek Bechorah is kept intact and it doesn't become any less. So in fact, as in fact, so the Gemara says, sorry, I skipped a line. So my timer, why is that? Why would we say that? Why would we say that only once the baby is born does it affect the chelik b'chora? Because v'yolduloy amar achmana, in connection with the din of the b'chora, the pasuk says, and the man's wives give birth to children, v'yolduloy, they give birth to children to him, implying that that the father is still alive. So therefore, so only when the father is still alive do we say that we calculate the chelik b'chora across all the children. But otherwise, we're saying since it's a baby who wasn't born yet when his father died is not part of the yolduloi, therefore the chelik, therefore he doesn't, therefore his birth doesn't affect the chelik b'chora, only the chelik pasha. So that would be what the Mishnah in Nida means. And again, then, so that has nothing to do with what Rav Sheshis is talking about, whether an unborn baby is able to Yarshin or not. And the Gemara continues, as in fact, Ma Breid Rav Yosef says in the name of Rava that he was another din, that he was a he was that din, Ben Shinola Lachamisas of a child who's born after his father died, then he does his birth does not reduce the Chelik Bechora, like we just explained. My time of Vyolduloi Amarachmanovaholeka, because the Pasuk says Vyolduloi, and here you don't have. Now, there's an interesting point over here. The Gemara that we have in front of us is di'omar, which means that it's all one long statement. We see that Rava, we see that Mar Brei de Rav Yosef, in the name of Rava, says that we can answer that the Mishnah in Nida is implying to us that point. And we see, in fact, that is, and we see, in fact, that is the din. Now, does Mar Brei de Rav Yosef himself hold of this din? If we say de Omar, then we would say that yes, so we're saying that that he actually holds that way as a matter of that he actually holds that way as a matter of halacha. On the other hand, you have so they, on the other hand, you have a gius over here, Vi Omar, and Mar Brei de Rava said, Mar Brei de Rav Yosef said that. Then it would be, in other words, that he used that to answer to answer Rav Sheshis's din. So if we say de'omar, then it means, in other words, he's saying, I'm using this to explain Rav Sheshis's opinion, but I myself, or at least my Rebbe Rava, may hold differently as we talk about on Omar Aleph. But if we say ve'omar, then we're saying two separate things. Not only am I using that to explain Rav Sheshis, but actually Rava actually holds this way as a matter of halach. So the Gemara says, "B'sura machnu hochi." In Surah, they learned Ma Brei de Rav Yosef's statement, like we just said, that we're talking about that the baby was born after his father died, and we're saying that it doesn't affect the chelik b'chorah of his older brother; it just affects the division of the rest of the property. But Pumbedissa masnu hochi. In Pumbedissa, though, they learned Ma Brei de Rav Yosef's statement differently. That, according to them, what Ma Brei de Rav Yosef had said was b'chor shenor l'vacham misas avim, specifically a b'chor who was born after his father dies. Now, if he's a bechor, implies that there are other sons after him. So what, how is that possible? So the Rashbam says either you could have that, for example, the mother gave birth to twins, so the first one is a bechor and the second one is a pashut, or the other another possibility is that the father Yaakov had several different wives, and then after he died, then so after he died, but both of them were pregnant when he died, and now later on, Leah gives birth to Reuven, Rachel gives birth to Yosef, and therefore, so both of them were, so the Bechor was born after the father died, but so was the Pasha. So Ma Brei de Rav Yosef says in the name of Rava, according to this version, Bechor shenor l'lacha misasavim eino noto pishnayim. He doesn't get a double portion. My time of Yakir, Omer Achmona v'Halesa, because the pasuk says that the father should recognize the Bechor and give him the double portion. And here that's not possible because the father's dead by the time the Bechor is born. So therefore, the concept of giving him a double portion doesn't apply. which the Rashbam points out. Now, it doesn't mean that the father has to be able to physically see and recognize the child. The din of that the Bechor gets a double portion would apply even if the father's not in town, even if the father's blind or whatever. It's called Kol Haroi LeBila. As long as conceivably the father was alive to be able to recognize the child, then we don't care whether he actually did or not. But here we're talking about he's dead. It's impossible. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying on the basis of that pasuk, then that Bechor does not get a double portion. And the Gemara points out Yakir. So the pasuk says Yakir, and here the father is not around to recognize the child because he's dead. And the Gemara points out in fact the halacha is like all of those lashonis, all of those various versions of what Rabbi Yosef, it's said in the name of Rava. So yes, an unborn baby is able to yarshin. So like we said before, to explain Rav Sheshes, and that he is not Mamayat B'chelik B'chorah. However, the baby was born after his father died, does not reduce the Chelik B'chorah of his older brother, and that if the B'chorah himself was born after the father dies, then he's not getting a double portion. That's according to the Rashbam, again, according to the Ramban, that Marbred Rav Yosef was just explaining what Rav Sheshes said, but then in fact, as we discussed before, maybe Rava disagrees with Rav Sheshes, and the halacha might be like Rava, then it would mean when we say kechol hani lishni, we mean only the second and third points that he said, that the unborn baby isn't, once he's born, is not mamayit b'chelik b'chora, and that he doesn't get a chelik b'chora, and that he himself, if he's the b'chora, doesn't get a double portion, but not necessarily. Would that mean that the halacha is like Rav Sheshes, that the unborn baby himself is able to yarshin? Again, this is a big machlokas we've shown him, like we discussed before. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamazaka la'uber lekana. Getting back to our original point, if a person wants to be mezaka something, wants to be mezaka property to an unborn baby, loikana, then he's not koina. V'im toma mishnah senu. You're going to ask, what about an arm mishnah where we're saying that if my wife gives birth to a boy, then he gets 100, and if a girl, 200. And there, as we explained before in the Gemara, as we learned yesterday, necessarily that has to be talking about where the baby is unborn yet, based on the wording of the Mishnah. So how can Rabbi Yochanan say otherwise? So Rabbi Yochanan says, however, daitishal adam kroiva etzal benoi, because a person's das is very close to his son, so therefore he's willing to be makna to his son with his whole heart, but not when you're talking about an unborn baby of somebody else. Then he wouldn't have necessarily that. Then he wouldn't have that kind of that kind of krivus das, that kind of close emotional feeling, and therefore he wouldn't be makna to him. Achronim deal with actually a number of different ways. I mean, how does that work? The fact is, if we said before that you can't be makna to a davar shalei bala olam, like we said before, then how would that work? How does daita shalot of krovei etzel b'noi help with that? So there's a lot of lumdus about it. That in fact the Pshita Mukubetzis brings from the Rosh that the reason why does a kinyan not work for davar shalei b'olam is because you don't have gemiras das, you don't have a definitive thing in your mind that you're going to be makne to him. But here in this case, because of daita shalom krovei etzel b'noi, we would say that you do. But then there's other things about it. There's something from Rav Shimon Shkop about it, and from other achronim, that basically it depends on what is the makna intend. The koine is sort of passive in it. The makna is the one who makes the kinyan actually happen. So and since over here the makna wants to be makna because daita shalom krovei etzel b'noi, so therefore it works. Even if the koine himself, even if the one who's receiving the kinyan in this case is an unborn baby and he's not fully able to receive it, but then that would be a special case. So the Gemara finishes off. Amale Shmuel Rav Chana Bagadta. Shmuel says to Rav Chana Bagadta. Rashbam says that Bagadta means that he was from Baghdad. There are other places in Shas where Rav Chana Bagadta is also mentioned. In at least one of them, Rashi gives a different explanation, that he was a Baal Agada. Bagadta, short for Baal Agada, that he was an expert in Agada. In any case, Shmuel tells him, Puk Aisili Beyasora, go out and bring me together 10 people. The emalach ba'apayu, I want to be able to tell them, to tell you in their presence, hamazaka la'uberkana, that if you want, that if you're mazaka to an unborn baby, he is kona. So in other words, Shmuel wants to publicize this point. Shmuel wants to publicize this point that that it is possible for an unborn baby to be kona. On the other hand, the Gemara says, but the halacha is not like that. The halacha in the end is that that if you're mezaka to an unborn baby, then he's not kona, with the exception that we said, and therefore, and therefore he's able to be makna to his own unborn son. But otherwise not, because it's an unborn baby and he's not able to be kona in the end. As far as whether a baby, as far as whether the unborn baby is able to is able to inherit, that would depend on the machlokas rishonim that we discussed before, of whether the halacha is like Rav Sheshes or not. In the end, the final halacha is that an unborn baby is not able to yarshin either, and that means, in other words, in the case we said before, that for example, his if it's going to be a matter of bequeathing it to his brothers from his mother's side, then it's not that, then it's not going to work. So in this connection, so far we've been talking about at least where the baby, so far we've been talking about where at least the baby is in the womb already. So now let's talk about, incidentally, by the way, this that we're talking about, whether it's possible to be makna like this to a dovah shaloi bala olam, and there's no smichus das, and we're saying that if there's smichus das, then it would work. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh actually brings it in connection with the sale when Esav sold the bechorah to Yaakov. Then why did Yaakov make him swear? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains that he made him swear because that a shvur can be chal even on something that doesn't have mamoshus yet. But in addition, since there's smichus das, then he needs the shvur, and he says kayoim over there, and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh mentions a whole thing about it that Yaakov knew the relevant halachos that we're talking about over here, and he taka arranged that sale in such a way that should be taka valid al pi halacha. The Gemara says, "Hahuda amal advesu." There was a case where a man says to his wife, "Nechose lebnoi diyevul liminich." My nechosim should go to the future children that I'm going to have with you. Now, here the wife wasn't even pregnant yet. Also, break shisha. The guy's older son came. Omale, he says to him, "Ahu gavra my tevi ale." What about that person, meaning myself? What's going to happen with me? Are you going to cut me out entirely? Omale. So the father tells him, "Zilkni kechad mi bara." Fine, you'll go acquire in the nechosim a portion equal to one of those yet unborn children. So in other words, basically he's telling him, listen, by the time I die, I may have another 5 children besides you, let's say. So then at that point, there'll be 6 and you'll be the bechor. So you'll get 2 portions out of 7. So maybe you won't get a chelik bechora, but at least you'll get a portion equal to each of them. The question is, does that work? There's no question that those yet to be conceived, even children, are not able to be kona, because they don't even exist yet. At least an unborn baby, we talked about before, maybe according to Reb Nachman, we said we can consider that he already exists in the womb, but here they don't even yet. The question is, so now the question would be, this young man, the older son who came and complained, would he at least get a portion together with the other children? In other words, so this matana that the father did is obviously ineffective, but eventually those children will be born and they will yarshin, and here the father said you're going to get a portion equal to one of them. So does he get that, or less like chulak latalia b'mkayim benaya, or does he not? He just gets so he would get it. So in other words, if we would say, if we say that the father's matana is effective because he said you should get a portion equal to one of the children, then it means at least he's getting an extra portion of the Yerusha equal to them. To keep things simple, I guess we could say, let's say this older son himself was not a bechor, let's say he had an older sister. The point is, in other words, do we say that the father's matana is effective to the extent where he will get that extra portion, or does it not? And it just means that they split the Yerusha equally between all of them. So the Gemara says, Rab Ovin v'Rab Miyashi v'Rab Yumi da'ami ischulak batalya b'mekayim b'naya. So these three Amiroyim say that yes, he will receive an extra portion together with the other children. So meaning, if altogether at the end, if at the end there were five children, for example, and let's say again, to keep things simple, he's not a bechor, then it means we're still going to split the Yerusha into six portions. He's going to get one portion because his father had said so. And in addition, then you're going to have five portions that are going to be split among the five of them. On the other hand, Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak, Nafka, Damilas, Cholok Latalia, Memkayim Benaya, another three Amiroyim say that no, he would not have that extra portion. We just split the Nechosim into five, and each of them gets one part. So the Gemara says, Omale Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Yumiya. So Rabbi Bohu, who was part of the second group, who said that he's not getting that extra portion, asked Rabbi Yumiya, who was part of the first group, he says, Hilchsa Kavasan, Hilchsa Kavasaichu. So who is the halacha like? Is it like us, like our group, or is the halacha like you, the first group? Omale, so Rabbi Yumiya says, Pshita de Hilchsa Kavasan. Obviously, the halacha has to be like us. Tkashish Naminaichu, because we are older than you. The lav hilchsa kavasaychu, the halacha shouldn't be like you, the daudiki atun, because you're younger. And there is, in fact, a rule in halacha up until the time of Abaya and Rava. We usually say the halacha is like the earlier chachamim, but still, it seems a little odd that Rabbi Bohu is even asking the question in the first place. Rabbi Bohu has a svara. Why should he think? And he's going to say so omale. So Rabbi Bohu answers back. Since when does it depend on age? But time Italia Milsa, it depends on the Svara. And we have a logical Svara behind our opinion that would says Rabbi Bohu, that we would say he doesn't get that extra portion, because how can you say that you should get a portion equal to the other children when those children don't exist yet and are unable to receive a portion at all? So what was the question in the first place? So Rabbi Hanan explains that when you get down to it, when the Gemara paskins, where like one Amora over the other, sometimes it can be because the Gemara actually looked into it, the Chachmei Gemara, Ravina and Ravashi, or their predecessors, looked into it, found a logical reason to say the halacha should be like him, and therefore eventually we could even find, for example, that when we have a general rule, the halacha is like Pliny over Pliny, for example, the halacha like Rova over Abaya, except in six cases, means that the Chachamim found that they researched each one of them and always found that Rova's opinion is more logical. Let's say, or the same thing, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda or whatever, and therefore they set that as a principle. Or we would say that we would look at which Chacham is more of a Bar Samcha, which one is more reliable. So here, Rabbi Bohu is asking, here you have a Svara on both sides. So do we go according to Bar Samcha? So Rabbi Yumi is saying, well, the fact that we're older makes us more bar samcha. And Rabbi Bohu says, no, it's not a matter of that. You determine whether somebody is a bar samcha based on the logic. Well, so the Gemara asks for time of my, fine. So Rabbi Yumi says to Rabbi Bohu and company, what's your reason to say that he shouldn't get that portion? So Rabbi Bohu says, Zil Gabe de Rabbi Ovin, go ask Rabbi Ovin. I previously explained to him, and when I gave him the following explanation, the Kaukish Beiration, Beit Medrash, and he nodded his head to me in the Beis Medrash, showing that he accepted my Svara. Also, the Gabe, so Rabbi Yumiya goes to ask Rabbi Ovin, Taka, why would Rabbi Bohu and company hold that he doesn't get that extra portion? Omale, so Rabbi Ovin answers, Ilu Omale Kni Kachamur. Consider, for example, if the father had said to the son, you should be koina a portion in these nechosim like a donkey. Me koni, would he be koina? A donkey is not able to be koina nechosim. So you hear in the news where sometimes this old lady or whatever dies and leaves all her money to her cat. But in halacha, such a thing doesn't exist. A cat or a donkey or whatever is not able to be koina. Says Rabbi Yumiya to Rabbi Ovin, and Rabbi Ovin agreed to this and nodded his head. The same way, these unborn babies or unconceived babies don't even exist yet in any way that we should say they're able to be koina. Therefore, when he says you should get a portion equal to one of them, we can't say that there's any portion for them to get because they don't exist yet, b'chlal. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll discuss that point. Taka, if a person says, that you should be kona along with a chamor, what happens? But the point is that Reb Oven had accepted the logic that the same way as you can't be machna to a chamor, the same way you can't be machna to a completely unconceived and unborn baby, and therefore to say that you should get a portion equal to one of them is not going to work. And the result is eventually when the father dies, then all of his children will just split up his nechasim equally, and this older child won't get anything extra.